rebound. Shoots it, deflected right in. Peter Angle save rebound. Nasty stop by Peter Angle. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Nasty. He can't believe the save that Peter Angle just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Nasty. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 83 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I'm your host Joe, better known as Washup Goalie on social media. You've probably noticed this summer I haven't been releasing an episode every week like I typically do. While I'm always working on lining up guests so I have one for every week, I'm not putting as much pressure on myself to make sure I have one lined up for every single week during the summer. We have a lot going on around the house, and I'm prioritizing myself here this summer. As for this week, I'm joined by pro goalie, architect, artist, Kimberly Sass. I've been following her and her art for a while, so I was excited to talk to her. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Kimberly. Well, thanks for joining me on the podcast. We've gone back and forth, had it scheduled, then I had to cancel because I was out of pocket for a while, and but here we are. We made it happen, so thank you.
Podcast tag, basically.
Yes, exactly, exactly. In fact, I think we were scheduled the week I went out to North Carolina, and I completely forgot about it, and you're like, can we move it? And I was like, yes, I need to.
Where are you from?
I am originally from Chicago, but I'm in Minnesota now. Okay. For now, I should say. Right before you logged in, my wife was sending me houses down in Tennessee because we're looking to move. So,
wow.
Who knows where I'll be next?
Nice.
Yes, yes. So I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, but it's really just a chance for me to talk to other goalies, you know, about the game, how we got into the game, but also life away from the game, because, you know, I've been following you on social for a while, and you're more than just a goalie. You know, you're an artist, you work in the construction industry with architecture, you know, you went to a school that's not easy to get into. So, you know, you're multifaceted, which I think is awesome. And as a father of a daughter, I think it's awesome to have goalies like yourself on that, you know, can say, hey, kind of the old I am woman, hear me roar.
Yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, female athletes, female pro athletes especially, have had to, you know, become multifaceted, have multiple careers so that they can play their sport, you know, and make a living. So I think For me, at least, it was in college, being a student athlete, multitasking in, I majored at Colgate, I majored in studio art and geography while balancing, you know, playing D1 hockey there, and then coming out, going into grad school, and then pro hockey became a thing, like in my last year during my thesis of architecture school. And I was like, why not? I'm used to, you know, doing multiple things at once. And I think that might be a little strange to a guy potentially. Maybe, you know, they're not used to doing that. I mean, some players, you know, take the college route, but not all of them that go pro do.
So. Yeah. You know, and it's, so let's start, you know, with the hockey side of things. You know, how did you get started in the game of hockey? You know, I always like to find that out with a lot of people. You know, I know on your Wikipedia page, I think it said you started out with figure skating, you know, which, you know, so how did you get started? You know, trade in the toe pick for the hockey skates.
Basically, yeah. So my sister and I, my parents, you know, would take us recreationally skating, like ice skating. I think we probably went when we were three, and my sister's 2 years older than me. So, and then I think my parents signed us up for figure skating probably when I was six or seven. And the local coach for a girls team in a boys organization for the Amherst youth hockey organization kind of approached my dad at the rink at figure skating practice, and he was like poaching Figured skiers to come join the hockey side. And my dad played goalie growing up. And fun fact, he knew the rink manager, the local rink guy. So he got to hop on the ice with some like injured Sabres players growing up. So that's his name.
Yeah. So your coach was essentially doing a Gordon Bombay, seeing who the good skaters were out there.
Yeah. So my dad like was all about it because he played hockey. I was seven. We played for Amherst Youth Hockey. Our team was the Mighty Ducks, my first year playing. I tried to play out, but I think like all the coaches were like, Kim, why don't you try goalie? Because I was not good. And I just loved having the special equipment, and I thought that was the coolest thing. So I tried it, and ever since then, I just stuck with it, and we didn't rotate goalie position anymore. So my dad was my goalie coach from, you know, then on, basically, until college. So
that's awesome. You know, and I think so many of us goalies, you know, I've talked to a few who, you know, they skated out for the first few years, but and then they, you know, were forced into the net or whatever reason they got in there. But so many of us were just like, no, this is where I belong. This is where I want to be, you know, and you know, sometimes because we weren't great skaters, but I don't know. I just feel like we're all destined to, you know, at some weird reason, we're just destined to be between the pipes.
It just seemed much more simple. Like you have like one job. Just I mean, not to say that you don't have to be coordinated to be a goalie, but just being, I don't know, forward seems like you have to have way more coordination.
I know for me, one of the reasons I wanted to play goalie is because I couldn't master the hockey stop when I first started skating. I was like, well, goalies don't seem to have to do that. So, and I was a catcher in baseball. So it was like, it all worked.
I was a catcher too in softball.
Yeah. You know, my dad always said, you know, I don't know what it was with you and the equipment, but you like to have it on. So you start playing goalie, you know, I know in New York, you know, it's kind of like Minnesota and Michigan and that they had girls high school sooner than other states. Did they have girls high school hockey when you were growing up, or, you know, what was that scene like?
So they had, not for public school, you know, if you went to a private school, you could play girls high school hockey. So a lot of my friends went to Nichols School and went, you know, private school for high school, but I did public school at Williamsville North, and they didn't have the, you know, public school girls program yet. They formed it the year after I graduated, but as a goalie, I actually liked playing with the guys. So I played guys or boys JV and varsity for my public high school, like at the same time as girls travel for the Buffalo Bisons program.
Do you think skating with the boys helped you heading into college?
I think so. Yeah. I feel like at that point guys were, you know, their shot releases were like a little bit quicker than the girls. Mm-hmm. So just like the increase in speed, I think just adjusting to that, I think helped prepare me for the college level.
Yeah. You know, and looking at when you played college, I was covering high school hockey in Minnesota at that point. And, you know, the girls game, it's come so far in just a matter, you know, a few short years, but I remember going to those games and there was a noticeable difference between, you know, girls varsity versus boys varsity. And, but it, not as much. It is out. So, you know, it's, I can see how playing on the boys team then probably was beneficial for you. How did you, or I shouldn't say how, but what attracted you to Colgate and want to go play hockey there?
So in my, I guess, college process, I made my little spreadsheet with my dad in Excel of, you know, what the schools were that had a graduating goalie, like, you know, the year I would be going, or the year before I would be mm-hmm. entering in. Also the schools that had a program that I was interested in. And not only like schools that had a goalie graduating the year before, but you kind of have to take a look at, okay, once that goalie is out of the picture, what are the two goalies that are left in the program? And do I think that I can compete with them? You know, if my goal is to try to be a starter at the school, you have to kind of like weigh your options there. So I went to, let's see, Providence College, Princeton. I was looking at a few others. NU. I knew I didn't necessarily want to go to NU since it's like, you know, in my backyard, basically being from Buffalo. So
yeah.
Late in the game, I got a call from Colgate, and they had a junior goalie who would be a senior when I would be a freshman there, who had an injury, so she couldn't play when she was a senior that much. So I immediately considered it, because I think at that point the only option I had was NU.
Mm-hmm.
So went to visit the campus and loved it. It's like a small town, basically hilly. It was in the fall. It's like, actually every season is beautiful there.
Yeah. It's a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. So, and I like this, the small school feel, the like small class size. They had art, and I thought I was going pre-med. That was a big no once I started college. So I immediately, you know, signed basically after that.
Now, you just said something there. So you went to school for pre-med, and I think this is important for all young goalies. So many people I know start college with one thing in mind and go a different way. What drove you away from being pre-med?
Probably, I think, calculus. Like just some of the prereqs that you had to have.
Which is funny, because what you do now, you probably use some calculus.
I definitely use some math.
Yeah.
I think just like also juggling the whole hockey time commitment plus something mm-hmm. else. Not to say that art isn't time consuming at all. There was a lot of all-nighters that I had to do for that, but I just immediately knew that it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Taking like the prereqs, basically.
Well, and I think it's interesting, once we get to college, we start studying what we're interested in and not just what's required of us, like in high mm-hmm. school. And so when you're pulling those all-nighters, yeah, you're pulling an all-nighter, but it's in something you enjoy. So it's not as annoying. Especially, you know, my friends who are art majors, you know, they'd be in the studio all night, but to them, that's where they wanted to be anyway.
Yeah, we're passionate about it. You know, I think my FSEM, like freshman seminar class, was also like a psychology of birds class. I'm like, no, this is not it.
Yeah. Kudos to the professor who is able to convince a board that, hey, we need to have a psychology of birds class, because they're birds.
Yep.
You know, put the food out and they're happy. kind of like goalies. Leave us alone and we're happy. There's not much to think about there.
Yeah.
You know, so you go through, you know, your 4 years at Colgate, you play, but then you're like, you know what? I'm not done with school. I want to go to grad school. And you major, or I shouldn't say in grad school, it's not majoring, but you go for architecture. And I'm interested in this because I thought when I was younger, I was either going to be a pilot, until I realized if I joined the Navy or Air Force, they'd be shooting back at me. So it's like, that's out the window. But I loved Legos as a kid. I was always building stuff. I thought I was going to be an architect until I saw how much math was involved. So... what is it about architecture that you love? Because I still love taking, you know, the architectural tour in Chicago down the river. I love
just
that
recently
side
did
of things.
That. Yeah. So my dad has a engineering degree, mechanical engineering. He deals with, I guess he's an account executive, deals with sales of mechanical equipment. So he's in that, he's already in that realm. And yeah. I actually did not want to pursue grad school. I was so, you know, attached to hockey at that point, like I wasn't really even thinking of the future, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So my parents, like, this was like winter break in December, you know, really urged me to finish my portfolio to apply to grad school, getting like my tests done to mm-hmm. apply. So I had to put together all my artwork. That's what I used for a portfolio to apply to grad school for architecture. My parents felt like that was a more stable career path than being a full-fledged artist. So I reluctantly listened to them and got all my stuff together, applied, got into some really good schools, actually. But I think it came down to I don't want to be in debt for the rest of my mm-hmm. life. So chose the public school at home route at University of Buffalo. So moved home right after undergrad, and I wasn't finished with my prereqs even for architecture, so I had an 8 a.m. physics class in the summer. So I was legitimately depressed, though. like mental health, like after hockey, I just knew that I wasn't done playing, mm-hmm. Or didn't think I should be done playing, and just, you know, being forced into something that I didn't necessarily know that I was going to enjoy, you know, just was not a good mix. So was not really happy for
yeah
that summer, even going into school. But
so we'll touch on that part of, you know, the not being happy when that playing career ends. But I'm curious to know, as we're looking at houses now, and there's so many different styles, what is your favorite architectural style? You know, is it kind of that modern? Is it the old craftsman? You know, what's your favorite style?
I would say modern, and I'm loving what, especially around Buffalo and like Rust Belt cities, what they're doing with like old warehouse buildings and turning mm-hmm. them, you know, like rehabbing them into that modern crossover between modern and industrial, like old school feel. Yeah. So, if I could, I would love to buy a warehouse and make like a live work situation for my art studio. We'll get into that later, I'm assuming.
Yeah. 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 No, growing up, my dad was a fireman, and I always thought like I was going to buy this old rundown firehouse and rehab it into my yeah. living space, but that hasn't happened. And I know my wife well enough to know that won't happen either. And so I've given that one up, but I would say mine is probably like a craftsman modern, if that's even a style, but I like that craftsman.
Like rustic, you mean?
Kind of. Yeah. That I know some people use the term farmhouse modern, but I'm not a farmhouse person. No, but okay. I like those modern straight lines, clean, but still yeah. My grandfather was a Finnish carpenter. So I love that woodwork and the trim work. It's like there's some cool stuff there. And having grown up in Chicago, you know, walking down the, you know, Magnificent Mile and going down the river, there's some great buildings, but then you got them right next to these crazy ultra modern ones. It's like,
right.
I like them both. You know, I think of, the Wrigley Building and Tribune Tower right next to the ultra modern Trump yeah. Tower. And it's like, architecturally, they're all awesome buildings, but they're just mm-hmm. right there next to each other.
I love the mix in Chicago of
yeah.
the new, the old, and then there's some that are like combo.
Yeah.
It's a really cool city to visit.
Yeah. I like those ones that are kind of able to mix the old with the new, but that, mm-hmm. then you get down to, you know, by Water Tower that survived the Chicago fire, and there's a firehouse there. I absolutely love it.
and it survived the fire, and you walk in there, it still has the wood beadboard ceilings. But when you go around to the back, there's a door on the second floor to nowhere. And people are like, why did they put that there? Well, when that firehouse opened, they had horse-drawn engines. So that was the door to the hayloft. And if you
gotcha. Oh, I can't hear you.
I bumped it, but they would hoist the hay up to the hayloft, and so it's just one of the prettiest firehouses in the country. On top of that, so back to what you had mentioned, if you know you weren't ready for hockey to be over, and I think for a lot of hockey players, not just goalies, in athletes in general that play at a high level, you know, college and beyond, there comes that time where the competitive days are over. You know, there's always the beer leagues, and the beer leagues are awesome. I love them. But that competitive side, that competitive journey is ending, and mm-hmm. we don't know what to do with ourselves.
It's beer league is not the same. I tried it, after undergrad hockey, college hockey was over, and I remember getting so pissed at my team, basically, because no one was playing defense, and my boyfriend plays roller hockey, and he, you know, skated out, he tried ice hockey, mm-hmm. and he thought I was, like, pissed at him because he plays D, and, like, not playing well or something. I'm like, no, I'm just furious, like, you don't understand right now. It's just not the same, you know, as competing at like, you know, you don't have that pride either. Like in college, you're all working together for mm-hmm. your team, you know? And I just feel like beer league is not that sometimes. So,
you know, it took me a few seasons to accept and understand that, yeah. You know, it was understanding like they didn't play to the level I did. You know, they can't see that they need to move to catch that pass and they should have that pass and there's no excuses. Yeah. But they're just like, oh, it wasn't to me. I shouldn't have to skate to it. It's like, no, you should be able to, you know. So once I understood that part of it, I started to understand it more. And then I was listening to the Goalie by Garmin podcast. I loved them because they're like 5-10 minute podcasts. And he brought up the focus on the things you can control. And mm-hmm. once I realized I could not control any of my teammates, only my own movements, I enjoyed beer league a heck of a lot more because mm-hmm. we might lose 8-2, but only one of those goals was really something I should have had, you know? Right. And it's like, okay, you know, and I've said it before on the podcast, we're at the point where as long as somebody remembers to bring beer and nobody gets hurt, it doesn't matter what the scoreboard says, it's a victory.
Yeah.
Because we're all getting older. You know, luckily some of my teammates are getting a little bit wider. So as the old Cubs pitcher Rod Beck said, you can't pull fat. So we don't have to worry about as many injuries anymore as we did. But once I accepted that, I enjoyed the beer leagues a heck of a lot more because it is a transition. You know, it used to be my teammates make fun of me because I still get to the rink an hour before a game to get in that right mental space. And they're like, showing up 15 minutes before the game and I'm, you know, doing visualization drills and everything else. They're like, what's wrong with you? It's like, that's how I'm wired, guys. Like this is what got me as far as it got me, which was JV back up at a D3 school, but still it got me there.
Nice.
But they don't, some of them never played organized hockey until the beer leagues. And it's like, okay guys, but yeah, it's tough. But you know, to your point too, there's kind of that depression can creep in there too, because, you know, for mm-hmm. some of us, you know, there isn't that chance to keep skating. You know, I didn't play after college. I went the coaching route for a couple of years. So I was still on the ice. I think that helped me not fall into that depression thing. Cause I still had the competitive side of it where, but
I think it's also like has to do with losing your teammates too. Like, your friends in college, because coming back home, it's like, all right, who do I still know from high school that still lives here, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point, because as I've gotten older, I'm in my 40s now, and so many of us have reconnected on Facebook, and we do live kind of scattered out, and we're all like, we need to get together for a weekend tournament just to like have that weekend of a team again, mm-hmm. you know, because for those 4 years in high school, only those guys in that locker room know what that family was like.
Right.
You know, as much as we got on each other's nerves and everything else, we still want to get together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, Colgate, I think, does, like, for reunion weekends, I think the women's ice hockey team allows the alum to, like, all skate one of the nights.
Yep. Yeah.
Happening when I was playing there.
My college does that, too, but it's kind of like an all year. So, you know, the beer league team I'm on, one of my college teammates got me on the team because he lives half mile from me. Showed up to the national night out with the fire department. He's like, what are you doing here? It's like, I live here. What are you doing here? He's like, I live here too. He's like, we need a goalie. Are you available? It's like, sure am. But I've been able to skate with some of my college teammates. But again, one of the guys, he's got that backyard rink. And he's like, we need to get everybody together for like a Saturday night skate. And as soon as yeah. we start talking about, of course, after outdoor season was over, we're all like, absolutely, let's get it on the calendar now. And he's like, it's not that easy. We don't know when the rink will be ready next year. It's, you know, weather dependent, but we're like, yeah, we need to do this because, you know, there's that competitive side of us where it's like, this is what we got to do. But to your point, that family aspect of it, it's, mm-hmm. it's almost like you're mourning the loss of a family member when you don't have that anymore.
Yeah. It's real.
It really is, you know, but luckily we have things like social media now where it's a little easier to at least keep in mm-hmm. touch with those people. It is kind of funny to see some of these people as we've gotten older, and it's like, you found yourself, you know, a spouse, like who the heck would marry you and who would have a kid with you if yeah. they only knew, you know, it's probably also a good thing we didn't have social media when I was in high school and college, because they probably wouldn't have those spouses now. So nice. Somewhere along the way here, you know, you're playing college hockey and then you're getting ready to go to grad school. And, you know, as you said, your senior year, there's this idea of pro hockey for women. How did that come on your radar, and how did that come about that, you know, it was the first year you played in Buffalo?
So my senior year of college hockey, I had the choice of like going to grad school or going to Europe to play. Like some players older than me mm-hmm. did that. I believe the CWHL was happening then, but I don't think that they were even paying anything at that point. I could be wrong, but I just knew there wasn't like money, I guess, involved in that. And I didn't necessarily want to delay grad school since, you know, my parents thought that was the best yeah. route to go.
Yep.
So, I was like, no, I'm not going to go to Europe. I'm going to go to grad school. And I was like, I guess I'm done playing hockey. So then fast forward to 2015. So I graduated in 2012. 3 years, I'm just like heads down, slamming coffees, doing the architecture stuff, you know, sitting at my desk, like all nighters, like eating pizza, whatever.
Yeah.
And then 2015, they announce that they're going to have the first, you know, pro league in North America paying players. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm doing this. Like, I didn't want to be done. I have been doing this master's degree that I still don't really know if, you know, I want to be doing. I'm going to do this for me. And so I whipped myself back in shape for, you know, in 3 months, because they let us all know, like, you know, the spring or early summer before the fall start of the new league. And then I tried out for Buffalo, made the team. So I was so excited. It was so cool to be part of that. And like, but balancing, you know, my thesis project and writing that book, you know, while I'm, you know, going to practice. And some of the players like were fresh out of college, so they just like delayed starting to work and maybe mm-hmm. had help from their families to support them for rent and stuff. So I just felt like there was like a team dynamic thing going on with, like, I didn't necessarily fit in that well with my teammates at that stage because I was like laser focused on trying to finish
right
grad school, and they were like, let's party like every night, like every weekend, like,
yeah,
you know, drinking on the way home from like road trips, and I'm like writing a paper or something.
can you guys in the back keep it down?
I was that teammate, like the annoying teammate at the front. But it was still a super fun experience to be a part of. I didn't get that much playing time. I actually, speaking of equipment, going from my sizing in college and then waiting 3 years and then ordering equipment, you know, 3 years later, a lot changes. So I actually ended up with the wrong size pads. They, since the material, you know, you probably know this, became more stiff, the knee roll is in a different spot, even if you order like 30 plus twos in both.
Yep.
So I was used to like, my equipment didn't fit me basically. And I had bloody knees inside of my equipment. They were too tall. So
last year I ordered my first set of equipment in 20 years. So I went from, you know, old 90s era Vons to brand new Vons. And I'm glad I went to the shop to measure them. I was going to anyway. But I went from 34s to 32s.
I think
because of that,
the difference between, like, this is just one of many differences between male pro hockey and female pro hockey. We don't have reps coming to visit us with like their bag full of stuff. So yes, like you said, we would have had to go. I would have had to go to a pro shop.
Yep.
Say, can I try this on? But I didn't. Dumb me. Whatever. So that also I think contributed to. Potentially my lack of playing time, but we did have Bree McLaughlin, no big deal, an Olympian, and Amanda Makala also, who's very good. So I think I only played like one or two games my first year. Then the second year, I reached out to Buffalo and to New York, and they had already like selected their goalies that they wanted. I think third string was open, but they weren't paying third string that year. So I decided, at that point, I was working full time at an architecture firm, like in second half of the first season. So I was like, no, I'm going to keep working.
Hang on with that.
Yeah.
As you're playing pro hockey, finishing grad school and now working, like, what did your classmates and now coworkers think?
So it's like actually embarrassing a little bit. I'll tell you a story from when I worked in New York, because this is where it like really hit home for me. So I walk into my new job in Manhattan at this firm, and I had been playing, I played for the Buttes, and then I took a year off and played for the Riveters out of New Jersey for 2 years.
Yep.
This is going into my second year playing on the Rivs, like when I got my new job, and two of my coworkers come up to my desk and they say, oh my God, can we have your autograph? Like, they knew who I was. They followed the team, I guess. And they're like, but second question, why are you here? Like, they legitimately were confused because they're like, you play pro hockey. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And it's like, just like embarrassing. And it almost makes me want to cry. Like in that moment, I was like, yeah, we don't get paid enough. Like, you almost feel like you have to like validate yourself. Like as a pro you have to be like, I swear, like I'm good at hockey, because it's like, they're like, why are you here? Why are you doing architecture? Like, go away.
Yeah. Well, at that point, you guys were still buying your own sticks, even. Not just equipment, but your own sticks.
The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer, with tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports. You can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same-game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. As a Cubs fan, it's tough to look at the standings and get too excited. But with DraftKings, I can get excited about every game by placing prop bets. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
So at that point, my fourth season in the NWHL, I was making $3,000. And I paid more in the equipment and poles that we had to drive all over New Jersey that season. Like, ice wasn't booked properly for practices. So we were like hopping around to different practice rinks. And, you know, I actually lived in Brooklyn for half that, the beginning half that season. So I was driving into work. Like, we had practice twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday. So in the morning, I drive to work in Manhattan. So that's one toll. Then park my car, pay for parking in Manhattan. Then drive through the tunnel again. And then drive past our typical rink in Newark to, you know, these other rinks. And then, like, finish practice at, like, 11 p.m. And then get home all the way back to Brooklyn by, like, 1 a.m., and alternate, like, street parking there. I would never find a spot, so I'd be driving around to, like, 1:30, 1:45 a.m. And then I have to, like, get up, you know, and go to work the next day. And it was just, like, there's no time for recovery. Like, what do you eat for dinner while you're, like, commuting 2 hours? It was just insane.
Yeah, and so, traffic in New York, it doesn't matter where you're going. There's nothing that's 5 minutes away. Right. You know, it's always a long commute. Like,
we all had jobs to pay. We paid to play pro hockey.
Right.
And it's sad and depressing, like, to talk about out loud almost. And so,
yeah, you know,
segue into my art career, that's kind of like all those feelings were what fueled why I started SAS Studio and got back into art. And I thought that was like, making a whole show about the positive and negative experiences I've had as a player was like the most productive way to use my talents, you know, through my art to convey like what the realities are. So,
yeah, that is actually a perfect segue because first of all, your art is awesome. Thanks. You know, so much of it is hockey focused, but it's really given a message of like one, playing goalie sometimes is lonely, but two, like the reality of women's pro sports, not just hockey, but pro sports outside of probably women's basketball, you know, they're better compensated than most, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's like baseball in the 1910s where, you know, you're playing because you love it, not exactly. because of the money. And, you know, hopefully the money trickles down, you know, and the next generation of girls can play pro hockey and focus on pro hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as we look at some of the front office moves in the NHL this year, there's a lot of women filtering up through the ranks, and that's awesome to see. Yeah. You know, but will that filter down to the pro hockey ranks? Will we start to see, you know, more girls, you know, filtering up through the ranks, at least at the goaltender position? There was that Gale picked last year in Canadian junior hockey. You know, will we see more goalies at least make it to the pro ranks?
I think we definitely will. And as the money increases, I think the talent is just going to get that much higher because we're not going to be, you know, driving, you know, through the night, not recovering,
right.
doing another two jobs to survive at the same time. So
yeah, well, I remember I was in college. I was skating at Johnny's Ice House in Chicago over break. And Sarah Tooting was on the ice before me for a goalie practice with her coach before the Olympics. And then I can't remember which player from the U.S. Olympic team was out there skating with us. And she had incredible hands. She was just dangling around everybody. But her shot, it wasn't getting by me. And now I skate at the Super Rink, which is the home of the women's U.S. national team. And I see these women out there. Guys, because you're going to embarrass me now. It's just how far the game has come is crazy. Mm-hmm. Although I think it might be fun content to see, you know, a beer league goalie out there with the women's national team. The
show. I would love that.
I forget who the comedian was. He said, you know, if we really want to show how good even the worst Olympians are, we need to put a normal person in each event. It would work better for track and field and stuff like that. But, you know, you see that person from some weird, you know, isolated island country, and they're finishing dead last by 25 lengths, but they're still faster than every one of us. You know, we don't realize that.
I did a crossover like thing like that. It doesn't count because she wasn't just a normal person. She was a pro soccer player, but like, I think it's on my YouTube channel. She played goalie, put on all my equipment, and then I played soccer goalie, and I almost killed myself, like, running sideways into the goalpost. But that was a fun time.
Well, that's like, I love Kendall Coyne Schofield and her husband. He's a Super Bowl winning football player. And they'll do these different things, and, you know, it's just kind of showing, you know, like, yeah, he's this great, talented athlete too, but he can't do what she does and she can't do what he does. They're different skills. Exactly. It is fun to see those. Kendall Coyne's dad went to my high school with my dad. And then my dad worked with her husband's dad at the fire department. So it's like, if I wanted to, I could probably, you know, connect paths with the two of them. It's funny how small the world is.
Yeah.
But back to your art, you know, as you said, kind of that realization of, you know, the reality of women's pro hockey at that point was kind of drove you back into the studio. Mm-hmm. You know, was it one of those things when you started that you thought, I want to have, you know, my stuff in a gallery and have shows like you are now? Or was it just, you know, a lot of friends I know that are artists, you know, it's just the art speaking to them. They got to get those emotions out. And was it more of that? And then you stood back and you're like, wow, I've got something here.
I think it started more, with like the message and like what I was, you know, sitting down with my teammates and we're just like, you know, in 2018, we won the Isabel Cup championship and we got these championship rings, but none of us knew that, like, you know, even the year before and the first year that the players paid for the rings. And so, you know, our captains would send a message on the group chat and be like, okay, Venmo me this or pay directly to Legend Rings, like X amount. And it was only like $100 or something, but it's like just the principle, like we felt like no one knew any of this. And sorry, my dog's crying. Lenny.
That's our, I was going to say, what kind of dog is it? Because I'm surprised mine haven't been barking yet.
Come here. You want to show your face? He is a lab. Lab German Shepherd Beagle mix.
Oh, so, you know, not a wallflower by any means.
No, he's a little overweight, as the vet said.
Yeah.
70 pounds, so.
Yeah, we have a petite golden doodle who's very codependent, so if my door wasn't shut, she'd probably be in my lap right now.
But back to your question, I think it was just the messaging that I wanted to get across first, but then I'm like, I really do want to get back into, like, formal art again. Like, that was where I felt, like, the most alive instead of, I mean, I architecture for me is a like, and art is a love. And mm-hmm. while I still enjoy like the design aspects of architecture and, you know, the challenges of it and like solving problems and stuff, I just love being the freedom of creating, you know, whatever you want. And yeah. so it started with the ring painting, and then Leonard. No. and then evolved into 7 paintings, 4 installations, and 2 videos, and debuted at MSG, hosted by the Rangers, went to 2 galleries, and then was hosted by the Kraken. I was on NHL Now Live, which was amazing.
Yep.
And moving forward, I'm in talks with other NHL teams to host next season. So
that's awesome.
And some other like NHL commission related work. So definitely tapping into like, you know, the sports realm for my art business. But don't want to rule out, you know, like my own personal interests. I think I'll try to work on a show involving like Buffalo architecture and materials soon also.
That's awesome. So I want to be mindful of time because you still want to get a workout in. And as I mentioned in our text, we're taking my nephew out for dinner tonight because he goes off to boot camp next week for the Navy. So we're very proud of him. Awesome. So I end every episode with a list of 10 questions. I used to call them rapid fire questions, but that's not true. But they're the same 10 questions I've asked every guest, from, you know, Bantam goalie to Eddie Belfour to Sammy Joe Small. Every single person gets the same 10 questions.
Okay.
So the first one is, what's the craziest coaching moment from your playing days where a coach just lost it?
Lost it. I would say to do Kirby's in our days at Colgate. Do you know what that is on the ice?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm from Minnesota. Of course, we know what a Herbie is.
Okay. That was not fun at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would say that was like the craziest like reaction from a coach I've had in terms of like discipline.
Yeah. When I was growing up, we in Chicago, we didn't call them Herbies. They called them 60-second drills because they would put the time on the clock. And, you know, it was a squirt. You had 60 seconds to complete the whole thing. And here I am with my 70s-era goalie equipment that weighs more than I do. I'm like, that's not happening. Nope.
Not happening. We it would all work out like if the goalies were all in the one group and then the next group went without any goalies, we would have no rest time.
Was the worst. Yeah. I for some reason I was pretty fast, and we would do this drill in high school where it was called catch the dog or something like that, and one skater would start on the blue line and everybody else would start on the goal line. If somebody caught them, then they didn't have to do the next one. Well, they would put me on the blue line to start, mm-hmm. and nobody had me until I had to make that turn around the net with my goalie skates. It's like, nope. And my coach is like, if we could just go straight for, you know, 400 feet, you'd beat everybody. He's like, it's the turn that hurts you. I was like, yeah. It is. So this one's going to be interesting because of your art background. What's your favorite all-time goalie mask?
Are you talking like someone else's mask? Well, any mask.
I mean, if yours is your favorite, I'm not going to judge, you know.
I'm going to be straight up with you. I don't really have a whole lot of time to watch really any sports on TV.
Yeah.
Much less like just guys or female.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll pick one of mine. What mask of mine is my favorite? Probably my Buffalo Buttes one. I have like my favorite water tower on the side from Buffalo. I have like some bricks and says like Buffalo and a heart. It was actually like graffiti on a building. Just like a lot of architectural elements on that mask I like. And the blue color is cool.
I was going to say, I think I've seen that one. And if it's the one I'm thinking of, yeah, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Your Riveter one was pretty darn cool.
Riveter too. One's cool. And that was part of like a fan like selection too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So the next question, what's your favorite rink that you've played at?
Oh. I'll pick from college, I guess. Sorry.
That's all right. No, I love it because to me, that's just, that's life. And our dogs love us. And they're like, no, pay attention to me.
I think I actually really like Dartmouth's rink. Just how like tall it was.
Okay.
Second, I guess, runner-up is Yale. I don't know if you've ever been to Yale's rink. But
I haven't. What's it about Yale's rink that you like?
So, warming up, like, at the top level, you'd, like, run like this, and it's, like, kind of, like, wavy because the design is sort of mimicking, like, a whale's, like, hump.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, if you look at it, there's like a central like spine thing that goes like up and down like a wave in the middle. Yeah.
You've now got me Googling Yale Ice Arena. Yeah. which yeah, in fact I coached it. No, he went to Harvard play. That's good. One of the kids I coached, that is a cool looking rink.
It's really cool.
I almost get Seattle vibes looking at it. Two very different looking rinks, but it kind of has Seattle vibes.
You're right.
That is a cool rink. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I want to go there.
Yeah.
So the next question, what's your favorite stick that you've used?
Favorite stick? Oh, I used Sherwood back in the day. But
the old Sherwood
9950s,
were they?
Like, composite sticks, definitely, like, the Supreme was my favorite in college.
Yeah, I haven't gone composite yet, but those wood ones are getting harder and harder to find, so I know it's only a matter of time till I gotta open up the wallet and pay for a composite stick. But
What stick do you use?
I've been using the Warrior Swaggers, but when I got my last one, because I got a set of red, white, and black Vons. So when I got them, I was looking for a new stick, and I saw on, I think it was Pro Stock Hockey, they had a red, white, and black Vaughn goalie stick. I was like, well, I got to go with that one because it matches the equipment, and I absolutely love it. It's the Keith Kincaid curve.
Yeah, I was going to say, Vaughn has, like, not old-school sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's what I'm using right now, and I love it, and just the look with my pads because I got the same graphic I had prior to, which is the legacy graphic from 1999 that Belfour had when they won the cup. So it looks good with my pads. And at my age, it's more about looks than it is skill.
Love it.
Yeah. So what's your favorite youth hockey memory?
I got a good one. My team would always lose against Assabet Valley. So this team was just so annoying to play against. And I would say highlight of my, well, there was a lot of good memories playing tribal, like girls hockey. But when we beat Assabet Valley in a shootout, I think this was at the Connecticut Polar Bear Tournament. And we were like, we finally beat them. That was like amazing.
Those are always fun when you slay the dragon. I remember it was my senior year of high school, our tribal. My high school team, we weren't very good. Freshman and sophomore year, JV combined in league play, we went 138-1. So our tribal, us graduating seniors, we hadn't beaten them. And there was just this feeling all week going into our final matchup with Marist. And we're like, no. It's not happening this time. We are going to beat these SOBs.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, like, we grew up playing hockey. So most of the kids on the Marist team were our teammates from youth hockey. You know, they were our neighbors. You know, some were best friends. But it's like, once we hit that ice, we were from rival schools because schools were a mile and a half apart. So we hated each other in that regard. We just came out and had a heck of a game. And I remember the clock was counting down. And my one teammate came by me. He's like, it's happening. We have bragging rights over these kids, you know, from here on out. Because the last time we played them, we beat them. It was like, yes, that's all that matters.
Amazing.
So what's the best chirp you've heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you, not directed at you?
I feel like being a female goalie, there's a lot of five hole chirps.
Yeah.
Didn't love those, but the best chirp. I like the grocery stick ones where you're like, you're such a grocery stick. That was so like 2000s. I'm dating myself, but grocery stick meaning like you divide the forwards and D on the bench and you just sit there.
I like that. That's awesome. That's the first time I've actually heard that.
Really?
Yes. Maybe that's because I always sat at the end of the bench so I could talk to the other goalie. Yeah, in fact, we're playing one junior B team the one time, and he's like, other goalie's looking over him. He's like, so do you guys not fight because you're a Catholic school? And I looked at him. It's like, no, we don't fight because we're wearing full cages, and it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't
and he's like, oh, I suppose that's right. And in my mind, I'm going, yeah, you're not going to be coming here and taking my spot. Not with those smarts there. But I like that, the grocery stick. Next question. What is the worst post-game beer you've had? Or just beverage in general?
Any light beer now after college, it tastes like I'm licking the beer pong table. So I'm a huge like IPA gal now. So yeah, I don't really love the light beers after games, but it's okay. It's a beer.
You might be the first one I've heard that prefers the IPA after a game.
Yeah, probably.
You know, I like IPAs, but I'll take that light beer right after I get off the ice.
Thirsty, yeah.
Right, but once I get into the parking lot, then I'm opening up that IPA if they got... I'm all over that. I was filling in for a game here, and it was for a co-ed team, and the gal that was in charge of beer that night, she's like, hey, you want a beer before the game? I'm like, well, yeah, because I found one beer before the game actually makes me play better. It like calms me down or something. I don't know. And she tosses me a stout with an ABV of like 8%. And it's like, do you want me to stop pucks tonight or what? Like, this is not a pregame beer. In fact, this isn't even a postgame beer because we all have to drive home. And she's like,
Right. Yeah,
I don't know what I was thinking. It's like, I'm not going to drink this before the game. I'll wait till after. But every time I skate with that team, I was like, so what'd you bring for pregame beers? And she's like, I learned my lesson. Don't worry.
Yeah. One light.
Yeah. It's funny. Like I said, those light beers for that first drink right after you get off the ice, because it's darn near water anyway. That's why they're refreshing. But after that first one, yeah, let's get into something a little nicer and more refined. As I say that, my nephew wouldn't be drinking out on the farm. So when you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel? And I ask this because this is a very divisive answer for many goalies.
Mm-hmm. I do heel to toe.
Okay. You are in the majority of goalies. I've had two different goalies say that those that go toe to heel are psychopaths. I won't step into that fight, but I'm looking at him going, you might be onto something.
Yeah. I don't know anyone who does toe to heel now that I think about it.
The ones that I've talked to, most of them that go toe to heel are very much into playing the puck and very good at it. And I was talking to Connor Beaupre. He's the Wild e-bug. And he said, you know, it's because he plays the puck and the way the puck comes off and everything else. I'm like, I kind of suck at playing the puck. So
that
the way
seems,
I tape
maybe,
the yeah, the way
doing something wrong.
The way I tape the stick isn't going to impact my, you know, puck play. Although this summer I've been trying to work on that a little bit more. Who knows? Maybe I'll get more than one assist this coming season.
Nice.
You know, if you can't get one assist in beer league hockey each season, you probably have issues as a goalie. That's just my feeling. So what's your favorite number to wear and why?
I've always worn number one. I don't really know why. I don't really have a reason. I think I just like that it's unique and it's number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's a goalie number that not many goalies do wear anymore.
Yeah. 30. I guess my backup number would be like 31. But,
okay. Still keeping that one in there.
Yeah. Keeping the one.
Yeah. So the last question, what advice do you have for young goalies?
I would say keep working hard, because I feel like I underestimated myself almost. Like, I'd never really, even like as a senior in high school, I was never even like thinking about the next step. And I think it's very easy to like underestimate the work that you put in and like the outcome of it. So I think you'll surprise yourself if you just like nose down, do the hard work and keep at it. And I know everything's like super repetitive as a goalie, or can be. And also become a very, very good skater. So I think what helped me like early on in my career was my dad would take me to like all these power skating lessons, and just like being really good at with my edges and like skating with, you know, with my goalie equipment on even, mm-hmm. I think helped me navigate some of the like more complex movements and stuff.
Yeah. And you're hearing more and more of that, of, you know, be a good skater. And I was trying to remember who they had on the In Goal podcast this weekend. Oh God, I can't remember. He just signed in Buffalo too, but he talked about as a pro goalie going to a stick and puck and just going out there, and even open skate, going out there in his bottoms and just working on his footwork, you know, and here's a pro goalie doing that, you know, on his own, just like, yep. Skating's that important. I'm going to go out to a local open skate and do my footwork just so that I can get ice time.
I went to went to Bob Janos goalie sessions also when I was growing up, and even like now. But he has just like skating only sessions for like an hour, and you just do like goalie movement basically, and then the next hour is with pucks, and you're just like dead for the second session. But it's such a good workout and good thing to attend.
Yeah, that growing up, I would go to the Darren McCluskey Greater Chicago Goaltending School. And it's funny, I just recently found Darren's email, and we've been going back and forth. And the first three quarters of the skate was just movement drills. And the one drill I loved and I hated at the same time, we would have to stand on the ice, all of us in our, you know, ready stance. And he really believed in a good, strong, ready stance and a strong grip on that stick. And the instructors would skate around. They would take swings to knock that stick out of our hands. They'd be pushing our heels, just trying to knock you over. It's like, if you dropped that stick or got knocked over, like, you had to do up downs, you know. Just like, you did not want to get, you know, knocked over or any of that. It was just kind of funny on how that worked out. So, again, be mindful of time. Where can people find you on social media and follow your art journey? Yeah.
So on Instagram, my personal Instagram is _ The Daily Sass, D-A-I-L-Y. And my art, let me just check that I have this right.
And I'll have links in the show notes so that it's easy for people.
SassStudio_art on Instagram.
Fantastic. And I'll put links to that as well as the website too, because people can check out the art as well as pick up some pretty awesome apparel at the same time.
KimberlySass.com.
Yep. And like you said, it's some pretty awesome sweatshirts and t-shirts and whatnot. So I'll put that in there. And thank you. And I'm sure we'll keep in touch. And if the art stuff with the NHL brings you to Minnesota, let me know. And I owe you an IPA.
Yes. Sounds good.
It was really fun getting to know Kimberly. I wish we had more time to chat, but I had an important dinner to get to with my nephew who ships off to Navy boot camp this coming Monday. As a girl dad whose daughter loves art, but also has a technical side to her, there were so many questions I could have asked Kimberly. I would have also loved to have gone deeper into her connections with the PWHPA and the fight for equality in sports. You can find Kimberly on social media at _thedailysass and her art at @sassstudio_art. And be sure to check out her website, which features some of her art, which you can purchase at KimberlySass.com. That's SASS. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie and I'll pop up. Visit WashUpGoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights when the season rolls around, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on the website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA Podcast Network show where a couple of Beer League players talk Beer League hockey, draft experience shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many to list here, but shows like the Hockey Unfiltered podcast with Ken Campbell, the Bar Down Breakdown podcast, and the House of Hockey podcast can all be found. If you're looking for something good to read, get yourself a subscription to the Vintage Tendy magazine. Published quarterly, the magazine takes a deep dive into an 80s/90s era goalie. In the first 5 issues, they've covered Felix Potvin, Grant Fuhr, Tim Chevalier, Jocelyn Thibault, Ken Reggett, John Van Beesbrick, and episode 20 guest, mask painter and designer Don Strauss. I need to thank the band The Zambonis for allowing me to use their music on my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. I'm always working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. Let's not forget, if you're a brand who wants to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. So, until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck. Out catches.
Tarkin.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, have you checked out the pond today?
It's funny you ask. I was just down there this morning.
Yeah, any good news?
Well, Dave, the pond?
Yeah.
It's froze right over.